Call to order the regular meeting of the Tacoma Planning Commission for December 19th, 2012. I ask Mr. Wong, do we have a quorum?
Yes, you do.
Okay. So let's move on to approval of minutes.
Mr. Chair, before that, could we ask that commissioners consider revising the agenda?
We can.
We would like to request that we remove the second item pertaining to annual amendment number 2013-11, trail-oriented development. Removing that item from the agenda today, we apologize for the inconvenience and we appreciate your approval.
Do we have any idea when it might come back?
We plan to have it come back in mid-January or early February.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So I entertain a motion to delete item 2.
So moved.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Now, I think we can move on to approval of minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? So I had made a suggestion. I don't know if staff got it.
I just got it. I haven't got a chance to print it out.
Okay.
It's on the screen if I can pull it up.
It had to do with the shoreline public access alternatives, and it was the discussion pertaining to the Port of Tacoma. We had recommended last year that the Port of Tacoma, because of their concerns about kind of a fluid situation, never knowing what they're going to be able to do precisely, that it might facilitate the permitting process if they did a master plan. We didn't know at that time, in so making that recommendation, that such master plans are adopted apparently through interlocal agreements. And as such, under state law, we do not have any authority to review them. That came as a surprise to us. So the correction to the minutes basically were to say the commission did not understand when it recommended that the port undertake a public access master plan last year, that state law allowing public agencies to undertake their own planning, that when this is adopted through interlocal agreements are not subject to the commission's review process. And I think that is certainly consistent with our discussion. It was suggested that the commission should share its concern on this issue with the city council, since master plans by public agencies, paren, metro parks, Tacoma schools, etc., would also appear to be excludable from commission review. So,
what are the, may I ask what the implications are of that? So if they did their own master plan and it conflicted with Tacoma's, how would that be resolved?
Well, the city, as I understand it, the members of the city council now are negotiating in discussions with the Port of Tacoma directors. We made a similar recommendation on the tree ordinance
forestry
for the city. Yeah. We made a similar recommendation for Metro Parks. And I don't know how far this would go if Tacoma schools wanted to come in and do some kind of master plan, if it would be subject to the same exclusions. So I was just correcting that discussion in the minutes. And our recommendation that we send a letter to the council indicating our concern, because like on the shoreline, we spent 7 years on that. It's kind of hard not to have that continuity. Any discussion? Can I ask if people are in favor of the correction?
I'm in favor of the correction.
I'm fine with it too.
Okay.
I'm in favor.
Okay, Mr. Wong will make the correction.
Thank you.
Okay, I make I entertain a motion to approve the minutes then with the correction.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second.
Okay, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Okay, moving on to item 3, annual amendment 2013-08, platting subdivision regulations.
Item 1, Mr. Chair.
Oh, item 1. Okay. Excuse me. Yes. Mr. Hoffman is here. My apologies, sir. tell us about our new department.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Planning Commission. I'm Peter Huffman, the interim director of the newly formed Planning Development Services Department. So I appreciate the opportunity to come to you this afternoon and share with you a brief presentation on the new department. It talks a little bit about the mission statement, some of its objectives, goals, et cetera. I know that you have a busy agenda, and I've got another commitment I need to make. So it is brief, but I hope to have any, be able to answer any questions that you might have. But if time becomes a constraint, I will rely on Wong and Ian to get those questions down. I'll get back to you. So with that, I'd like to begin. So this is the mission statement. I'm not going to read this, but before I really, as you sit and ponder this and look at this, I'll just kind of step back and give you a little background on why the new department was formed. So unlike the majority of jurisdictions in Washington State, and certainly perhaps even nationally, the city of Tacoma has not had a planning department or a planning director since the late 1980s. For what purpose, I'm not that clear on, but what the planning function and development function has been fragmented and has been distributed throughout various different departments, primarily the Community and Economic Development Department, the previous Economic Development Department, and the Public Works Department. So the long-range planning function and the permitting function, the development services function, were separated between two departments, but then other departments or divisions of public works, engineering, environmental services also had a piece of the development services and planning functions. And so what it really did is it created a very difficult situation at times in which the planning and permitting functions were fragmented, the authorities within the municipal code were fragmented, the transparency of who was actually doing planning, who was doing permitting, who had the authority, the review process was cumbersome. And it really kind of created a situation where internally as well as externally, folks didn't know who to come talk to when they had a question about planning or development services. So those of us that have been in the city and perhaps the community for some time got accustomed to that situation. However, when we received the new, when the new city manager came in February of last year, T.C. Broadnax, he came from San Antonio, and one of his responsibilities in San Antonio was overseeing the planning development services function as the deputy city manager there. And so when T.C. came, he naturally looked for planning development services, a planning director, and he did not see that, and that, I think, was an interesting situation for him. And as he moved forward in looking at the organizational structure of the city, in light of the budget situation that the city was in, but not necessarily directly tied to the budget, but obviously it does have an influence on the budget, he was really looking at the organizational structure of the city and how to become more transparent, more intuitive, if you will, looking at core functions of the city, looking at core functions of local government. And in doing so, he thought, well, how can we provide a more transparent, efficient, effective approach to providing planning development services? And so in doing so, he created the Planning Development Services Department, and that was adopted by the council on the 4th of December. And so currently the Planning Development Services Department is really the building land use services, long-range planning functions that were in CED. He moved that out, but there is, I'll show you a little bit different approach here moving forward in the org chart on the next slide. But the mission is to provide timely, effective, engaged planning development services. And when I say planning development services, I mean long-range planning, current planning, development services, permit reviews, et cetera, to be a culture focused on customer service, accountability, and continuous improvement. There's basically two divisions in the department. There's the planning division, which Ian Muntz oversees, and development services, which Dave Johnson oversees. Within the planning division, there's the historic preservation program. Within development services, there's the permit center, which is basically the one-stop shop that we're standing up. We've been doing this for some time, but it's basically the intake, which has three sections in that. And then you've got more of the complex, what we've historically called it, the complex review, but those projects that typically take more than 2 weeks, discretionary land use, larger building projects, and so you've got a building and land use section in that. Now, the third piece that is we're still working on filling in is something that's a larger effort citywide, looking at planning development services, looking at those departments, environmental services department, which is a new department, the public works department, and even reaching out to Tacoma Public Utilities, but looking at those larger departments that do have a role in development services, but their primary mission is more than development services. So let's just take public works for an example. Obviously, public works staff has involvement in private development application reviews for development services, but their core mission is roads, bridges, etc. But they do have a small piece of development services. And so what we're looking at is aligning those staff members that are in those different departments under planning and development services by means of proxy, if you will. So they would still be staff members of that department, but physically locate them, perhaps even through reporting relationships, have them report to the development services manager and have authority over their decision-making process go to the director myself. So to combine and consolidate development services functions in planning and development services, have that professional discipline and understanding of those legal requirements associated with the city engineer, associated with the director of environmental services, stormwater, solid waste, state law, et cetera, but have the actual development services professional staff out of those departments physically located. The purpose of this is to consolidate and make it more efficient, the delivery of development services. And so that's a new approach that we're doing. We're, like I said, moving staff as we speak to the third floor, fourth floor, fifth floor of the municipal building to create not only that physical relationship, that teamwork relationship, that culture of development services, but to also streamline our decision-making process and our reviews of permits. And I'll mention this here, we're really moving toward a level of service, we like to say less than 2 days, less than 2 weeks, and less than 2 months. And so we've got a pretty aggressive level of service goals, and this is a very key piece of this. And my partners from Environmental Services, Mike Slevin, the Interim Director of Environmental Services Department, and Dick McKinley from Public Works, and Curtis Kingsolver, the city engineer, have all got the same marching orders, if you will, from the city manager, and we're all working in concert to create what we call the three legs of the stool: planning, well, it's land use, building, site development, public works permits, and then we're also talking to TPU about bringing the fourth leg in, which makes it a chair. So some of our service delivery goals, certainty, speed, consistency, customer service, collaboration. I think one of the key messages out of these words is speed, consistency, and decisiveness and empowerment. What we've heard from our customers, both internally and externally, is over the years, and there's several reasons for this. A lot of it has to do with staff turnover, but a lot of it also has to do with some of the systems that we've inherited and have in place, is I wouldn't say a lack of speedy decision making, but it is a cumbersome because the way the code is set up, the way the fragmented authorities are, there is a tendency sometimes to have the need to go to various different managers, assistant directors, directors to get to complex decisions. And what my objective is to compress that decision making authority, empowering frontline staff to make those decisions, having a consolidation of authority within the municipal code under the planning development services director so that we can make quick, accurate, speedy decisions so that externally customers don't have to wait around for weeks to get a yes, a no, or a maybe, that we can come to that conclusion quickly and that we can provide that certainty of service. Now, the key aspect of that is accountability. And oftentimes when you put accountability out there, people say, oh boy, how can I be decisive and quick when I'm being held accountable for it? I don't want to make a mistake. Well, what I'm trying to inculcate in the staff is not only the ability to be creative, decisive, empowered, but be respectful and understand that continuous improvement is okay, that making a mistake is okay. Certain times, some people sometimes see continuous improvement as an indication that I've done something wrong in the past and why do I need to improve? Well, what I want people to do is be creative, be decisive, be empowered, but recognize that if they make a mistake, they need to learn from it and improve upon it, and that they're not going to necessarily be reprimanded or lose their jobs, that it's okay for them to make minor mistakes and mistakes, but I don't want the fear of making a mistake and the fear of improving to reduce their desire to be creative and decisive, therefore speedy, positive service. So the budget for the department, it's an $18.4 million budget with 46.6 FTEs. Oftentimes people say, well, how do you have 0.6 of an FTE? It's because there are FTEs that do charge out to different funds. The budget has three primary funding sources. The first is general fund, and it's a $3.9 million budget. You look at that number and say, wow, those are some expensive 8.4 employees. Well, the reason that that 3.9 number is high is that embedded in that is a $1.5 million contribution to the enterprise fund, the permit services fund, of general fund money to pay for services that the state auditor says, has told local government, that we cannot pay for with revenues generated from permits. So there are certain activities, code development, long-range planning, for example, fee waivers, code enforcement, activities that benefit the general public that you cannot pay for by a fee that an applicant is paid to the city for the review of their specific project. And so what the state auditor has made is primarily two recommendations. One, establish an enterprise fund, which we call the permit services fund, so that you can separate the permit services, the revenue from permits, out of the general fund. Traditionally, local government, and some still do it, they commingle that with general fund. But the enterprise fund allows us to separate that out, to monitor that, and then we have this contribution from the general fund for those activities that staff does in the enterprise fund, those permit services staff that need to charge to that. It's basically the way I explain it to my wife and everybody, it's a small business, right? That's exactly what we've got, our expenses and our revenues. And our revenues are the fees that come in, and our expenses are staff time, staff primarily. And so that's what we manage. And so you see that there's $12.6 million in the enterprise fund with 37.7. That's the staff that primarily does development services. And then we have also have special revenue funds. Special revenue funds, the open space fund and other funds that come in to the budget from different sources that we use to pay for staff. We have a whole slate of performance measures, but I like to use this performance measure slide, and I think is probably the most transparent and understandable, if you will, for most folks. Our service delivery goals for residential and commercial development, you can see where we're currently at is 14 days and 84 days for residential and commercial, respectively. We're moving to get to 7 and 6. I mentioned the less than two weeks, less than 2 months. That's really what we're striving to do. And what we're doing, like I mentioned, is making some structural changes the way that we do work, not only from those authorities in the code, but also organizationally with other departments to achieve that. And the second one that I like to show, which when I first showed this to everybody on my staff, there was a big gasp in the room. It's like 95% everyone's going to love us. Well, I know that's a stretch goal, but I think we can get there. I think, honestly, right now where we're at is pretty close to that. It's remarkable, the positive feedback that we get from our customers regarding our customer service and the permitting services that we provide. But I think 95% is something that we can strive for and achieve. And how we measure that is an annual survey, but we also have individual surveys that occur when an individual comes in and seeks a permit. So some of the things that you all will be involved in as we move forward with some of the initiatives, we've created a Blue Ribbon panel that's made up of various stakeholders from various interests, designers, developers, real estate professionals. There seems to be a real desire to have some groups, more groups than one, venues, if you will, of stakeholders that meet on a regular basis that provide not necessarily issue-specific feedback to the department, but ongoing feedback to the department on what we like to call people, process, and policy. And so just basically ways that we can improve our service, improve our processes and policies that people would like us to bring forward to this body and the city council. And so the Blue Ribbon Panel is such a group. I am working with the city manager and the director of economic development on perhaps another group that would be tied maybe perhaps larger, more general scope of economic development and how the city is perceived and initiatives that the city does, not necessarily the technical aspects of providing development services or a larger group. Comprehensive zoning code update, this is something that we will be bringing forth to you in January. Folks sometimes say, well, we just did the zoning code update, you just did the mixed-use centers. Well, there's a constant need to look at the zoning regulations in light of the market that exists. And there is a great desire by folks in the community and many council members to look at, and particularly the neighborhood mixed-use centers, to look at the smart growth policies that we adopted in 2009, to look at those policies and regulations and review them in light of the market situation of Tacoma, to perhaps reset them to see if the aspirations of those regulations are consistent with the market forces that drive development. Are we too aspirational? Are we too restrictive in some ways that don't necessarily meet the marketplace in Tacoma? So that is a review that we're going to be looking at starting in 2013. It's a rather aggressive schedule trying to get that accomplished by the end of 2013. But honestly, I really don't think it's that large of a deviation from probably where we're at. There's probably just some minor tweaks and things that we've got in there. I don't know if this group has fully been briefed, but certainly we will brief you on the history of the mixed-use center update and some of the issues that initiated that and some of the issues that came up as we went through that process and the responses in the code that came out of that. Professionally, I do think that some of the regulations that we have in there are a little bit cumbersome and overburdensome on some development in light of some of the geographies that we have in the city, in light of some of the development patterns that we have, and especially in light of some of the work that we need to do with our utility providers relative to overhead utilities and other things, and how development can occur in light of that situation. Moving to full implementation of online services, we're launching a new website for the first of the year. Moving to an approach in which we may, and this is just really high level right now, go to requiring all applications be submitted electronically. Now, certainly you can still apply on paper, but there might be a fee associated with that. So looking at that type of approach and looking at what other jurisdictions have done with that, looking at the great work that the county has done, actually. The county has just launched recently a new web service system, and we're looking at that and talking to them about how we can perhaps not only have a system that is as well established as theirs, but how it can be coordinated and integrated as well. I know that this is on your docket for June 2013 is eliminate the land use intensities. The joke that I always use is there's probably 20 people in the whole city that understand the land use intensities. Some of them are in this room, and there's a few outside this room, but most individuals don't understand the land use intensities, and so I'm sure the work that Brian's been discussing with you is an effort to try to provide a more common approach to a comprehensive land use designation that is more transparent not only to investors, but certainly to neighbors. I think individuals living in Tacoma, I always joke that before you buy a property in Tacoma, yes, ask the realtor about the zoning, but you certainly better check the land use intensity. And most people say, well, what is that? Because if you don't know what the land use intensity is, you could have a light industrial project go down down the road from your house and basically go to the hearing examiner and say, I don't like this, but you're in a difficult situation. So that's an issue that's ongoing. other work that you've been involved in is look at creative approaches to address underutilized buildings, not only from the land use perspective, but the building code, and then create a one-stop shop for permitting services. There's an effort in Tacoma, and all of you are very familiar with this building. This building, by its very structure, is inherently customer service adverse. You would think that on the first and second floors of this building that you would come into it and there'd be somebody there that would say, where would you like to go or something. You come into this building and you don't know if you're on St. Helens, you don't know which button to push on the elevator. So there's an effort, and there's also security concerns associated with that. And so there's an effort going on in the municipal building to look at how we can push down, if you will, the customer service face of the city to the first, second, and third floors. The third floor is where we would have, where we currently have, the permit intake center. The third floor would be the one-stop shop for permits, and perhaps then what you would have on both the first and second floor is a customer service counter that you would come in and have that subject matter expert there to address your questions, and also have a security presence so that if you want to go to the other floors of the building, like many public buildings, you would perhaps get a badge and be escorted up there or something like that. Currently, right now, it's a free-for-all. Folks don't know where they're going. They have to go to multiple floors to get multiple answers to questions that they have about a permit. It's cumbersome. It's not safe. It's frustrating, and it's internally frustrating. So I can only imagine somebody, and I've been doing it for 20 years, so I can only imagine somebody who's new to the city trying to figure out how they get their special event permit, and they got to go to the clerk's office, and the clerk's office sends them up to right-of-way, and right-of-way sends them down to the permit center. So in conclusion, we've created a new department where our goals are to improve the delivery of services and cost management. We've got some relatively aggressive performance measures. We want to strive for those, but continue to improve and look at other models in the nation, in the state, and strive to be the best that we can so that we can make Tacoma a very competitive, very attractive, very livable place to be. So I would happy answer any questions. I am running out of time, but
I just ask you on the mixed-use centers. I mean, there's a lot of time or a lot of staff time and planning commission time went in that. And when you talk about the economic market, are there any specific things? I know we address the parking. We relax the parking requirements to try to make it easier.
The obviously part of it is perceived, but the one issue that I have heard from a specific project proponent was the mass reduction when you abut a residential zone.
Stepping down.
Yeah. And there's also, and so this project was on 6th Avenue, where it's obviously a narrow linear. And what I heard from this person was is that stepping down reduced the leasable floor area in such a way that it affected their performa, as well as the individual also said that to get the additional height, they were looking for the 65 feet. They had that step back, but then they also needed to have more on-site open space or public space, and that ate into it. Not that they totally understood the intent of the mass reduction, the stepping down, and the need to have that. I just think they were saying to me on that particular spot with the way the lot was set up that it adversely affected their performer. So that's one issue. I think the other issue that I've heard is that this is more perceived, but there are some geographies, 6th Avenue perhaps, that and the minimum densities have come up too, but there are some areas like 6th Avenue that would be, from a community perspective, that would be more acceptable of, and Stadium, for example, more acceptable of the density because it's already a relatively dense area. But perhaps the 65-foot tall building that got built in Proctor, you'd get one built, and the reaction from the neighborhood would be such that there would be a reaction to change the code. So, you know, there's kind of this concern that it's market, but it's also that the community doesn't quite accept the level of density that's allowed there, and maybe that level of density should not be universally applied, that it should be perhaps, you know, but without saying the vision should be different, but perhaps that the regulations, the allowable density, the incentives to achieve that density should be more catered or customized by the neighborhood geography.
That makes sense. So we're not talking about changing the growth policies for residential or employment. We're just talking about fine-tuning.
Exactly. And I think there's also concern, and this is outside that first phase, but I've also heard concern that, you know, basically what we've done is, and you know, this is obviously a very large policy discussion, but we've taken, obviously, we've got the mixed-use centers and we've got some wonderful smart growth policies and regulations for those areas, but through the years we've also sort of spread those out to our general commercial areas. So we've got 18 mixed-use centers, and then we've got these other areas of the city, and we've taken a similar approach, transit-oriented, smart growth stuff, and put it in, let's say, our C2 districts, which then dilutes the purpose of the mixed-use center. And so perhaps there's, like, you know, it's okay in some areas to have the more traditional strip commercial auto-oriented areas, but then focus that smart growth in the other areas. It's kind of an economic development discussion. Do you spread it out over the entire city, or do you recognize that the city doesn't have the marketplace to support that citywide, and you focus those incentives and that development style in the more, you know, more explicit geographies? That's kind of a larger, but the more is just a refining it in the first phase.
Okay, makes sense. Other members?
So great. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Now we will go on to item number 3. Ms. Shonta is going to...
I have to figure out how to get rid of this.
Give a presentation.
So we're back today to discuss the planning code update. On our last meeting, we went over the major components of the planning code update, and that would be for chapters 1304 and 1305 of the Land Use Regulatory Code. And so the main purpose of this update was to increase the number of, or maximum number of lots under a short plat from 4 lots to 9 lots. And with that, we also would get a reduced level of service for short plats from 90 days to 30 days. We also looked at some other improvements, and they're listed up here as part of that outline. And one thing we didn't really talk about, but it came up with Commissioner Dusek's question about unbuildable lots, is a benefit besides the reduced level of service would be also that we wouldn't be counting those unbuildable lots towards our determination of a short plat versus a long subdivision. And that actually does make quite a big difference for developers and also residents who want to do some planning work. So we'll be sure to highlight that as well when we go to Master Builders. One thing that we, of course, know that they'll be very much interested in is talking about the preliminary and final short plat proposal. And the whole idea behind that was to look at off-site and on-site improvements prior to recording a plat document, as we do with preliminary and final plats, but we don't do that with short plats currently. And with this update, of course, we talked about having a public notice for those 5 to 9 lot short plats, because we already do require that for administrative plats that are 5 to 9 lots. We're also looking at that in lieu recreation of dedication fee. So we'll talk about that again today. And we did look at creating a different section to put all of our manuals, codes, plans, development specifications, all that in one section of the platting code, so that way staff as well as developers and applicants and the public would know where to go if they were to want to review or apply for a platting application. It's all going to be in one section. So in terms of the Planning Commission's feedback, what I gauged from our last meeting is that we would talk about the open space dedication and in lieu of dedication fee, that we would just note that we did create a new section, or we revised the current section to put all of those resources for developers as well as staff and applicants to know which types of professionals they would need to help in designing a plat, as well as which type of codes and design tools they'll need to submit such an application. We also wanted to talk about the vesting for short plats in relationship to critical areas, and certainly other types of development regulations that could come after a plat is recorded. And then there's a minor change I made to the definition of a subdivision and short subdivision, and I just added the word if, so that way it makes it clear that you don't have to have a separate dedicated tract for a critical areas or its buffer, but it could be an option in the layout. So I think the first thing is perhaps the open space dedication. We could talk about that. So we did meet with our legal department, our attorney, and he did advise that we do take out that in lieu of fee. The major concern is that it acts as an impact fee, and under Washington code, in order to have an impact fee, you actually have to have an impact fee ordinance. You have to have a program in which to actually state where these fees are going, as well as a fund, and you also have to have a time limit as to when the fees will be used, and I believe it's about 6 years for that time limit. And those projects have to be listed in the comprehensive plan or in our capital facilities plan. So there is a program that we'll have to actually develop, and that's something that the Planning Commission as well as the City Council will certainly be involved in if we do decide to go that direction. But in the planning code, we don't want to keep it there because it leaves us open to a challenge. Platting in itself is already a process for everybody involved, including the neighbors, not just the developers or the staff. And so we really don't want to have a kind of a barrier or confusion as to what our code says and what we can actually legally require. So we did take out altogether the in lieu fee provision, but we did leave the dedication provision, because as part of a review, we do want to have that open space provision. And remember, this is for educational and recreation uses. And so the school district as well as Metro Parks would be partners in us determining what would be the needs of a neighborhood or a development area for that. And we also did add the short subdivision provision in there as well, because as the commission rightly pointed out, these plats could be for multifamily or mixed-use development, where it's not just one lot, one dwelling in terms of the impact. So we did add that piece to it.
Can I ask a quick question?
Certainly.
On the in lieu of dedication fee, most cities, certainly larger cities, have mitigation impact ordinances. Yeah. And mm-hmm. Cities I'm familiar with, they collect fees for school districts, they collect fees for parks, they collect traffic impact fees they use for multimodal transportation, et cetera. Is there any specific reason why the city of Tacoma has not moved in that direction? Mr. Munz.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, city council and successive city councils have made a policy decision not to go down that path. Part of the discussion in some of our sub-area plans has been, and the Urban Land Institute study I mentioned to you a few meetings ago, when they looked at the brewery district, said the city really needs to build a market so we can start charging for some of these things. And our neighbors to the north charge for everything, and we do not. And most of the time when we talk about even doing that, the response is you're just making yourself even less competitive. And so, for For instance, when I come to you with the South Downtown Plan, sub-area plan, you'll see a proposal to phase in impact fees once a certain amount of activity is going. But right now, it's no surprise to anyone, we're struggling. And so adding a premium to make us less competitive. I mean, one of the things we say when people are saying, well, there's all this cheap commercial space in Federal Way, well, we go, well, yeah, but they have impact fees and we don't. And so it's...
So the traffic signalizations, the left turn lanes, the things that have to go in, who pays that? Comes out of the general fund then? Or?
Well, there's two categories. I mean, one is platting code calls for immediate improvements needed for your plat to be constructed as part of your project. And so the immediate needs, the left turn lanes, the signals, depending on the size of the project, get covered. But it doesn't give you the money to do system-wide improvements. I mean, I worked on a transportation impact fee system for 20 years, and basically you looked at the overall needs of the city and you divided it up by number of peak hour trips projected, and you collected so much per peak hour trip, and lots of cities are doing that. The city of Tacoma leadership has not made a decision to go down that path. And I'd say we're, from a planning point of view, we're easing into that in the sub-area plans by saying we will need those funds at some point. But in today's marketplace, it's really hard to make that case. We're struggling. I mean, that's just the candid answer.
Okay, so it might be something in the future, but it's not on the plate.
I'll be coming to you with the South Downtown Plan saying, you know, it's fine for the moment, but we need, I think, a better mechanism, and looking for your support to the council to get a better mechanism to take us through the medium and long term. But no one's talking about it that I'm aware of in the short term.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner.
I know that our concern that Shanta spells out here is that we were concerned that the city and Metro Parks would be foregoing an important funding source. This has been in the code before. Do we know what funding we're eliminating through this in an order of magnitude?
In terms of tracking how much we've collected, mm-hmm. I don't believe so. And because it goes to Metro Parks and not to the city, and we could start we could look back in our previous records to see how much we'd collected in terms of permits. One thing I do, we did look at our permits in terms of our 10-year review from 2003 to the present. And so the code as it's written today is only for subdivisions, so for those that are five lots and more. So you can see we had a pretty hefty year here back in 2006 and 2005 where it was really ramping up. And then, of course, with the economy, things did drop off. So you could kind of look at to see these are the applications, and then we'd have to look individually to see how many lots were actually created with those applications. But no, we weren't actually calculating, and because the money never came to us to begin with, by Metro Parks. And I have heard feedback that Metro Parks, their front staff doesn't know about the fee itself. It's always a surprise to them when someone comes in saying, I need a receipt that I showed you I paid this. So they give them a receipt, and we don't know what they do with those funds. And again, that's also another reason why we need to have that figured out in terms of justifying such a fee. And then, of course, we do have our CEPA review for those that are under this proposed code would be 10 lots or more in terms of getting to those mitigations or if the impacts are created. CEPA is meant to have that gap in between what code doesn't allow for. That's what CEPA is used for, and that's how we do get some of those left on turn lanes, or we do get some improvements with traffic or even other types of improvements for the application. You know what? I'll just go ahead. And so basically, in terms of the code section that for putting in all of our manuals and our complete streets guidelines, that is on page 18 in Exhibit A, and that's section 1304.120. And so I don't know if you thank you. Nice. Just the next one. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. It's only two slides. I kept it short this time. So in terms of any of the wording, if you wanted to make any comments on how we actually structured it, but most of the yellow highlights now in our Exhibit A is because we're pointed to that section. So we just changed the wording just a bit. So basically we would always point to that section, and then if new documents do come online for us, then we would add it to that section rather than have to change every single specification section that we have in the platting code. And then for vesting, Commissioner Dusek, we did get some information regarding short plats do vest, but they vest to certain development requirements. Something, for an example, would be the lot dimensions or the average lot width. There's certain things that plats do vest to, but critical areas and other shoreline code would not be vested. So if a plat was recorded and then subsequent to that it was found that critical areas or buffers or, well, hopefully not shoreline, but hopefully we're not that close to the water, but then those regulations, they would still have to go through the actual wetland development or assessment process to assess how to develop those lots that have been created. So the layout wouldn't change, the number of lots wouldn't change, but certainly where development would occur might change from what previously was thought. Does that answer?
Yeah, I think I understand when reading through the documents what the changes are and what the intention is, and that they will go through some sort of critical areas review for this process, and then the lots will be developed, and then at that time, if the code changes for the shorelines or critical areas codes that they're not vested in, they will have to go through a second critical areas review to make sure that they're in compliance with the current codes and current buffering.
Exactly.
Because the wetland edges don't typically change all that much.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. That's
but you're
correct.
Saying the total, you gave an example, and you said the total number of lots would remain.
Would remain. And it might be that an applicant might decide, well, I really do have to change it. So they might do a modified application, but it wouldn't be, they would be vested to have the four lots. How they actually work their spacing and how they actually work through it could be a challenge, or it could be something that could be worked through.
It would also allow them to get variances and things because there are a lot that is vested in size and shape.
There would be a burden. There certainly could be argued that there would be a burden that they can't control, because certainly things have changed out in the exterior environment.
Could their lot lines change as a consequence of shorelines, for example, but they still get four lots? Is that... you're talking about working within...
If the applicant decided they wanted to change? Because I would say that their lines are probably vested, but where they actually put the development, because if the ordinary high water mark changed because of the shoreline changing... so it would change perhaps their buffer or their setback, but their property lines, or they might decide, well, perhaps they have to actually buy up other properties or combine properties to get the distance and the development standards that would be required. But they would be vested to those development standards. So if they had a 5-foot setback in 2012 and our setbacks changed to 10 feet, or I feel opposite, to 3 feet, you know, they would still have some of the requirements would they be vested to as well.
Okay.
So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Oh, and then I did mention for the unbuildable tracts, all I did would add the word if and change kind of the sentence structure for that. So I think that makes it clear that you don't have to have that in a separate dedicated track. One last thing we did add at the tail end was the RCW, because of the change in economic times, they did change the expiration dates on plats, and it's kind of a rolling, from what I could tell, it's a rolling date starting from 2007, and so depending on when you actually submitted a complete application, then it is changes your expiration date for the actual final plat recording.
So how long, how many years?
Well, let's see here.
7-5.
It goes to 2017. Okay, so on page 14. Okay, so it is based on your preliminary plat approval, not the submittal date. So when you got your preliminary plat approved, and then the end date, it looks like 2015, within 5 years. Okay, so then, yeah, so from 2015 it goes back to 5 years. But between then there was a 7 year, and then I guess there was a 9 year as well in between. So we just basically codified what the RCW says right into our own code, so it's more clear that way. And just so you know, we will be going to the Master Builders Association in the middle of January. We'll also be looking at the neighborhood councils, the school district, Metro Parks, and any other folks that we think will be interested in the planning code update. And if you think of anybody else we should be reaching out to as well, let us know. So, are there any questions, or we'll look at our next steps?
I just wondered on page 7, where mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. list application requirements. You talk about number of lots, dimensions, etc. But there, since we're discussing tracts, and I think mm-hmm. elsewhere I saw it for subdivisions, wondering. Shouldn't we add something about tracks, the location of any tracks,
right.
such as those for drainage, critical areas, open space?
And I would think, actually, the tracks, dimensions, location. And I think what I do need to do, because you reminded me of this when you asked this, was make sure our definition for lot parcel tracks are in line with the changes I just made, because mm-hmm. I think that was one of our concerns previously. So I'll go ahead and add that, plus check it against the definition, which is in a different section of the code, but definitely we'll do that for that page as well as for the subdivisions as well.
Okay.
Page 12, I think, is what
and
it's
then just
on.
A general question. We had that wonderful presentation on the new department, and I'm just wondering why we refer to Planning and Development Services, but it is
right.
now a department.
Department.
Would it be clearer
exactly.
and have a little more
right? Importance? And I did check with legal, because they did spearhead that effort to change all of the TMC. To be in line with the reorg, and they said it's fine to add department. I'll have to remind them it's in all other chapters as well, but basically Building Land Use Services was always a division,
right.
And whether it was in Public Works or it was in CED, it was always a division, and I think that's why they kept services, but now we've become a department, and hopefully that won't change quite a while. Right. So we'll go ahead and make those changes as well. Okay, so we're looking at a tentative public hearing date for March 20th, and so the request here is to actually have the Planning Commission authorize the draft staff report and exhibit for public review, and that's okay.
Okay,
with
I would entertain a motion similar to that. The Planning Commission authorized distribution of the staff report for annual amendment application 2013-08 planning code update. Public review in early 2013.
I'd like to propose the described motion.
Okay.
Good form.
Second.
Okay. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay. So on Shoreline, my understanding is we're basically the pass our comments on to Stefan prior to our next meeting on tentatively on the 19th.
16th of January.
16th of January.
That is correct.
Okay. Did staff have any comments on the Shoreline?
We don't.
Okay.
Thank you for understanding.
Okay. So that really brings us into communication items, and we do need a motion to cancel our January 2nd meeting.
Yes, please.
Okay.
I move that we cancel our January 2nd meeting.
Second.
All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, there you go.
So thank you. For the next meeting on January 16th, we plan to bring you back 3 or 4 items from the 2013 annual amendment package. Listed here are 4 items, but they may change depending on where each one is and actually who is working on what. As you understand, the new department, we have some staffing adjustment. We're physically moving, and so we'll have to let you know by beginning of January what will be presented to you.
Well, maybe in light of some of these economic development incentives, too, we might want to consider some of these such as. We had quite a discussion along those lines anyway on the drive-through regulations and the geographic appropriateness of some of them. Okay.
So, yes, Mr. Chair, I do have, I think we, Ian, Brian, and I, we have a couple of items to talk to you about. First of all, Vice Chair Gaffney resigned yesterday, and I sent you an email heads up already per his request. And so I assume you all read the email, and I will just let you know that the announcement for filling the position of District 2 will go out tomorrow, and we will set the deadline for application for January the 18th, and in preparation for the appointments committee to meet and review the applications on January 28th. And if all goes well and the appointments committee interviews candidates and made a recommendation to the council may make its final appointment, I think, February 12th. And so the new commissioner will be sworn in February 20th. So that's a tentative schedule. Now, Vice Chair Gaffney also left open the office of vice chair, and according to your bylaws, you would fill that position at the first regular meeting after after that position is vacant. And so it is actually today, but it's too short of a notice. What you could consider doing is either make a nomination today and make election on January 16th. Or because of a too short of a notice, you could decide to do nomination and election on January 16th.
So I would suggest we do the nomination and the election in January, since we have at least one
January 16th.
Member mixing. Yeah.
Yeah. Second.
I second.
If you all in favor, indicate by saying
aye.
Aye. And I think, Brian, would you like to talk about MLK plan?
Just quickly, I wanted to mention, I think you all saw emails to this effect anyways, but the Sudbury Plan and Environmental Impact Statement, the drafts of each of those documents is now out officially about the last week and a half, I think, on the street. We had open house last week. I appreciate it. I know Commissioner Lee was there. So we are accepting public comments from yourselves and others. We will be back to the Planning Commission probably in maybe in early February, we'll see, after the comment period ends, to sort of come and talk about both your own thoughts and those that we've been hearing from the community. But I did just want to check and see, in the email, obviously gave a link to the website, and it is all available there, both in its compilation and in individual components. But if anybody wanted either physical copies, which I have, if you really love them and love to get out the red pen, or also have CDs, if planning commissioners would like those, I could certainly provide those at the end of the meeting. So,
I'll take a hard copy.
Yeah, so would I.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. I would like to spend just a couple of minutes because this is the last meeting of the year. I wanted, on behalf of staff, we want to really appreciate your service, your dedication, your efforts throughout the year. This year is like many other previous years. It's a lot of issues that you know have gone through your review. You reviewed moratorium on large scale retail. Remember that? That's a Walmart deal. You also reviewed the moratorium on medical cannabis, a very tough issue that gone through your review. You reviewed MLK plan, just like Brian just described, critical areas, preservation ordinance update. He has a couple of review of the transfer of development rights issue, South Downtown Sub-Area Plan. Ian came before you a couple times, or maybe three times. You also did review the code streamlining, what we call code streamlining 2012. That included live-work, work-live regulations, parking exemptions, and CEPA exemption and for adaptive reuse issue. You also review some other issues like link light rail expansion, that subject, urban forestry code that may come back again. And all within these, you successfully reviewed and made the recommendation to the City Council the 2012 annual amendment to the Comprehensive Plan and Regulatory Code, and now you're in the process of reviewing the 2013 annual amendment. So very busy year. Again, we thank you for all your time and efforts and service and guidance that you provided us. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Yeah, likewise.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas to the staff. Thank you for your hard work this last year.
I guess it's really been a very enjoyable year for me, I think, particularly with new commissioners and getting up to speed. It's been exciting. Yeah, so thank you. We wore out the last group, so it's nice to have some new folks to work
new,
with.
New faces. Okay. Any comments by Planning Commission?
I had a quick question for staff, just kind of a procedural question. If the council wants the plan, one or more members of the council want the commission to work on something, do they have to do that through a resolution, or can they do they just ask for that? I asked because it came up recently, and I didn't know the answer.
None of you give up your rights as individual citizens to participate, and you have all sorts of expertise. And so if any council member talks to you individually and asks for your individual opinion, you would be absolutely free to do that. The obvious caveat would be you wouldn't be speaking for the commission unless you come back to the commission and the commission discusses it.
Right. Well, I in regards to the work plan, like how do new things get added to the work plan? Because I know that a lot of times, like, we propose things, right, or, you know, staff says, well, this is, you know, expiring, we have to change it. But also sometimes the council, like, directs us to work on something. And does that work? Does that come through resolution, or does that just, like, through an informal process?
I've been working with your chair on that issue as to how we can, whether we have a joint session with the council. We put the issues out on the table about 6 months ago, and frankly, the budget has just swallowed everything up. And so the discussion was, remember, Councilmember Bow came, and there was even some discussion that he might be a good liaison. Mm-hmm. I put in a memo to the assistant to the city manager that maybe we have a new committee, that council committee, that would meet maybe quarterly to talk about planning issues, or that the council designate one of the existing committees to work with us, and we just haven't received a response. So it's very much, Commissioner, on the agenda. It's just been a very difficult, very, very difficult few months, and so the subtleties just haven't been taken care of. But at some point we need to, particularly with the fact that we've lost some positions and some resources in long-range planning, we're going to have those difficult conversations with the city manager and then as to what we can and can't do. I mean, for instance, on the digital billboards, we had Lucas working on that, and you wanted some more information. And I, at this point, I'm hard-pressed to know how we're going to get that existing information. So I think we're going to have some difficult conversations, but hopefully they won't be crisis conversations.
So basically it's just we choose our own work schedule as the commission itself?
Well, there's two things going on, just to be make sure everyone's on the same page. The current language in the administrative code says the Planning Commission sets its work program, which sounds fine, except without a budget, you haven't got a work program. And so it's been a long day. And so on the other hand, the language you're looking at and sending out for public review, hopefully, says that this will be done in consultation with the council. And so if nothing happens before April with coming from the council or city manager, I'm hoping the chair will bring that issue up when we meet with the council and say, you know, the commission's not asking to do it on their own. We want to do it in consultation, but I'm not to put words in your mouth, chair, but we need you to consult with.
Right.
You can't, consultation works both ways.
Right.
And so I think we're going to get to that conversation, but Not quickly. I mean, it's been a difficult time.
I think Commissioner Nucci, probably all of us will be contacted. I've been contacted by a council member, and I think it's just it's important to be careful what we do say or promise, because we really can't do that without the full commission concurrence. And my recommendation to the councilman was that he should talk to staff. There is a process. There might be exceptions for emergency situations. If a new restaurant is going in some place and it doesn't have safe access, maybe the city council then has the ability on a recommendation of the planning commission to prioritize something that wouldn't otherwise be considered. But I think, a little caution with what you don't commit, and refer to staff on the process.
Most of what we do is long range. I mean, we can change the code when we prove we could do it in 4 months, not 18 months, but it's still 4 months to change the code. And I don't know how much Peter highlighted this because it's a sensitive topic, but one of the issues was that he is now the decision. We had this land use administrator position who was sort of quasi-judicial, which was, in my experience, unique to Tacoma, to have a land administrator rather than a hearing examiner. Lots of places have hearing examiners, but have a staff person as land use administrator was certainly very much part of the Tacoma system. Recommendations will now go from staff to Mr. Huffman, who will be able to make administrative adjustments. And he's very prepared, as you heard earlier, to make those decisions. So things on the individual projects will be coming to Mr. Huffman.
Well, these were street improvement type projects the councilman was talking about. Yeah. These are things that, to be on the list, I don't know how long that stays open, but to get into capital facilities.
Right. I remember the issue now, yes.
And
I think our answer was bring them up and we'll add them to the capital facilities plan, just as we've done in previous years.
Right. Yeah, and that was what I told him as well is, talk with staff, and there's a set calendar schedule where we go through these different things. And so that's why I was just wondering. He also had a zoning question too, looking at the zoning for a certain area. And so that was why I was asking, if he decides that's something he wants the planning commission to work on. A question he posed to me, which I didn't know the answer to, was, does the council control what the? Well, I guess one from what you're telling me, does the council control what we're doing? And you said, well, that kind of, sort of.
And then with two, budget authority, yes.
Yeah, right. And then two was, do they need a resolution to ask the planning commission to work on stuff, or can they just say, hey, we would like you to work on this?
The discussion that the chair and I have had with and indirectly through Peter with the city manager has been that's exactly the sort of issue we need to resolve.
Okay.
We're not in the situation we were in 2 years ago when we had people who we could pull off one thing and pull onto something else.
Right.
Now it's a question of we've made these commitments to move affordable housing issues forward. We've made commitments on this. And so we need to have a check-in process with. It's going to be difficult, frankly. And I think we're talking about having some sort of procedure where we can get some buy-in. And at some point, we have to say we just can't do it all.
Right.
I guess I'm focusing too much on the. It's not a problem; it's an opportunity. One of the things that Peter Huffman has talked about is the fact with. Now that there's one department, we have people working in current planning who used to work in long range, people working on long range. There's been a lot more movement around, which has been hard on the people involved, but it does mean we've got expertise here. We just need to make sure that we properly charge their time to the proper activities, because we can't charge regulation. We might be able to charge a regulation fix to the enterprise fund, to building permits, but just new code language, no. So I think we need to get our feet on the ground, build up some credibility that we do know where the difference is, and we can do it responsibly. But it's going to be a, I mean, I would say this next year is going to be a time where we try to come to terms with some of those things.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to add one thing. I think it's, is it mid-February now, the study session? I know part of what Ian's talking about is there's been this push to try to have a more regular time when the council and the planning commission can sit down. Maybe it's the chair or whatever it is, but basically it's intended to be this first time, this in February, I think it's mid-February, to have a study session with council where Peter's going to talk not only about the structure of the department and goals and things like that, but also talk about the planning commission's work program. And that certainly is an opportunity where the council can bring up things like that. I mean, I will say, in my own experience, the reality is there's no single answer to the question you asked. I mean, the council does obviously dictate. They give us a moratorium, and, you know, we can argue about whether you have to or not, but the reality is you have to. And so sometimes they do just directly dictate things like that. And then there's just the whole wide range of what the requests can be from, hey, let's add a few streets or sidewalks or whatever it is. Yeah, there's a process that fits nicely into things we're already doing. Let us know, and we'll take that up. And then there are zoning or otherwise significant projects like, hey, we want you to do this project. And I think the sensitivity, some of what the chair is talking about, is when an individual council member comes to you and says, I've got an idea to do X, you really have no idea whether that's one person wanting to do X or nine people wanting to do X. And so that's where you get into the difficult questions of that. And I think that's where hopefully this process, and maybe it'll develop more over time as a collaborative a mechanism to sort of establish the work program with the council, will be that avenue ultimately to sort of have those sort of discussions out in a public scene. So,
Mr. Chair,
yes,
just to clarify that we had talked about going to the city council study session to talk about the planning work program and working relationship with planning commission. That was originally scheduled for November and changed to December 12th. And now it's being pushed to January 29th, and as of yesterday, February 5th. As of today, February 12th.
Yes. So they really want to have
this afternoon. Yeah, February, yeah. The city managers keep pushing us, so I will keep you posted. Definitely invite at least a chair and vice chair to be sitting at the table, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of important when we move into our next program. Amendments, et cetera. Okay, anything else?
No.
Okay, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay, accepted. Adjourn. Everybody have a happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you.